Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, December 31st, 2019, the last day of the year. It's New Year's Eve. Happy New Year's to everyone. And Dwayne, I was asking you off air, but I'm going to ask you here now. Also, Times Square is in my background right now, but you know, I don't know if I'm more Times Square or Niagara Falls. Yes, for us Canadians, Niagara Falls is our Times Square with the traditional New Year's Eve concert show. But yeah, Times Square, Niagara Falls, hope you're going to have a fun New Year's Eve tonight.
Yeah, as I said to you off air, Times Square does not appeal to me because I'd like to be able to do silly things like use a washroom if I need to or find my friends if I walk 3 feet the wrong way. No. Maybe if I was 18, but no.
Just those silly things as, yes, I lost my kid and I can't fight it in this crowd. Yeah, it seems to me a bit daunting, but tonight I'm doing the traditional New Year's Eve for me, especially now that I don't have to work in the hospitality industries on New Year's Eve. I'm just going to stay home, watch the different shows. Probably not going to watch Steve Harvey, Fox, I don't know, maybe. But I'll be watching, I guess, the ball drop, and I'll be drinking some bubbly at about midnight tonight.
Fair enough. I am going to watch a Toronto band called Dwayne Gretzky. Yes, you heard that right.
Oh my!
My first name with Gretzky in the back name. They do. They rearrange very famous songs. They're kind of hip. If you're spotted, they're on Spotify. Give them a listen. They're worth it. They're interesting. Like they, you know, cover like ABBA songs, but it like twists them and make them like more dreamy or something. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But it's a, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And dinner before. So it'll be a bit low key. I'm not as low key as Kevin, but I'm going to be lower key than I have been in the past, where I have been in Niagara Falls before too. As I said to you off air again, froze my ass off. We ended up, that night was funny. We ended up at TGIF. We went to watch the concert.
That's a terrible restaurant around the, right next to the falls, not too far. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what we were on. Cause the only place we could get, we just kept walking further and further. Like TGIF is way at the top of the hill, right? So it was like the last place there and no one was there. And we had midnight and at TGIF's having like garlic bread or something. Great year. Fun. Anyway.
Great year, yeah. No, exactly. But, you know, it is the last show of 2019. Tomorrow, New Year's Day, we will have our top 10 Canadian moment of soccer in the decade. But today, it's the last day of 2019, and it's time to look back at the last 364 days and look at our top 10 soccer stories or moment of 2019. Dwayne, the only criteria here for our top 10 was, did it happen in soccer, and did it happen in 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's funny when we're doing all these lists, and of course we did the decade list, and we'll be pre-recording tomorrow's show a little bit later today where we break down the top 10 Canadian moments of the decade. But to try and break it down, and usually we do a year-end list, so this was the first one I did, and it was kind of interesting to look back, and there was actually quite a bit to celebrate from this year, quite a bit of interesting stories, and you know, we're going to go through them now.
How about you go with your, let's call it, we don't necessarily put number to it, but I guess we should. So let's start with your 10, I'll go 9, you go 8, all the way to 1. So your 10.
Sure. My 10, I'm going to go with a deep sigh before I launch into this. And I don't think you can ignore this story because it is ongoing and it is constant. And we talk about it every show. And everyone talks about it every show. Everyone jokes about how much they talk about it, but they still keep talking about it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about now yet, I'm going to give you a hint. I want to shoot it into the sun. I am talking about video assistant replays. Referees, I should say, not replays. Or as we just call it now, VAR. VAR has become like a generic term that means that. I know it means something else, but it's just VAR. It's VAR is my 10th story of the our number 10, or that one of the top 10 stories of the year. You look, Kevin, how can you not talk about 2019 without talking about VAR? It started out earlier, obviously, but this was a year, having hit the most popular league in the world, that it boomed into the public consciousness, and it has frustrated people to the point where today, just today, the last day of the year, there was a statement released from the folks that make the laws at FIFA saying that the Premier League is not doing this the way we told them to.
Well, we've been talking about this for weeks now here. Literally, like, MLS should send their head of pro referee, should send their general director, who's Howard Webb, on a trip to England, be like, Howard, go fix this, because it's literally in shambles.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, in terms of the refs not looking at it, but they specifically spoke to offside today in their statement, saying that if it's not obvious without, it shouldn't be pixels. You shouldn't be going that deep in. The whole idea is clear and obvious. That's right in the wording of how you use this thing. And the fact that you're booming it in and drawing lines on the screen and trying to blow it up to like the millimeter, that isn't clear and obvious. Like, this should be so clear and obvious to anyone who's talking about this debate. But I guess this is the can of worms that you open when you start to put video replay, because if you do that and then you go, yeah, well, that's not clear and obvious, so I'm going to allow it go, you're going to have people complaining that, oh, well, it shouldn't have been offside because his fingernail was there. You know what? I wonder that, though. Do you think people would now that they've seen what that looks like, be really that upset if the fingernail was offside? I think most fans, deep down in their hearts, when they get away from the heat of the moment, would be accepting if their team was scored on when a guy's head was slightly ahead of the defender, if they were basically even, because I think they deep down understand that that's a fair goal, because they wouldn't want to see it wiped off on their own team. So I think, having seen this now, I think fans would be accepting of slight, not even errors, just the fact that there's gray in the rule, that the offside is not black and white. It is in fact gray. There is room for interpretation in the offside rule. It is not meant to be literal to the millimeter, folks.
Yep. It's a worthy conversation, because we can do the entire show on that point only. And I could say, you know what? Yes, and they should do it differently, and it shouldn't be this. And what's clear and obvious? What's the threshold of clear and obvious? Who decides where that threshold is exactly? VAR, number 10 of our top 10 stories or moments in soccer in 2019. Let's go to my number 9, and we go to the Premier League on DAZN over TT in 2019 in Canada. It's starting also to have games on Amazon in UK, and it's not going down well. People don't like change, I guess, but it's also the fact that for SportsCenter shows in Canada, type of shows, the news, sports news, and even regular news shows, they usually used to post highlights and talk about games because they want to highlight their sports channel and want to drive the traffic to their other properties. Well, it doesn't happen anymore. So TSN's not necessarily giving a whole lot of time to highlights of the Premier League during their SportsCenter packages because they don't have the rights anymore. Same for Sportsnet. Heck, Sportsnet doesn't do anything outside of just like, oh, top 10 funny moment of whatever and whatever. It's like not even bearable to watch anymore. But yeah, the lack of Premier League, I would say, in our Canadian sports consciousness, Champions League involved also in this conversation, because it's on OTT. Look, I have DAZN. I have all the OTTs, I guess, available out there for soccer, and I watch it. But it's still, I have to put reminders. Like, I have to remind myself to watch a freaking Champions League in the Premier League. Is that normal? No. But it is all, I guess, collateral damage of that win by DAZN on that Premier League bid in Canada.
Yeah, look, this is the world we live in now, OTT for sure. And look, on the TV side of things, like on the scripted drama side of things, or reality TV for that matter, we are now, I think, getting used to it. And there is a pattern, and there is, you know, ways that people still are having that collective experience a little bit. I mean, there are obviously, you know, when Orange is the New Black final season dropped, most people watched that within the first week if they were fans, right? This is an example. We kind of get that sort of stuff. Like, we know that pattern yet. This is still new for us on the sports side of thing to have OTT. And obviously, because it is a live product, it is a bit different than the streaming process that the model is based off of. So there's still adjustment time to come here. And look, here's another example outside of the soccer world of how this has changed things. Normally at this time of year, I, you know, go on and on about You know, you could say whether I'm jumping the shark on this or not, but I go on and on about how over the top and how obnoxious TSN's promotion of the World Junior Hockey Championship is and how much they've ruined that product for me, yeah. Something I used to enjoy as a kid. This year, I'm like far less angry about that. And you know why?
Because you don't watch TSN.
I don't watch TSN unless I'm watching something specific on there.
True.
So, you know, I've only watched one game from the World Junior Hockey Championship, the game they lost 6-0. But
Happy New Year, Canada.
But yeah, it's a little less obnoxious because you can find what you want. So that's a pro of it, I guess, is that you're not having things shoved down your throat and you're not feeling resentful for that. And in a way that might make you, you know, more open to it. I think that the, I forget her name, the woman that won the darts in England. She became a star, I think, largely because yes. People can now choose to see stuff like that that in the past maybe they weren't seeing.
Which
that
was on his own, by the way. Did you know that the World Championship lasts for like 3 weeks? This is insane.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
DAZN is actually, it should be Darts Network, really. Like, there's darts on DAZN all the time.
DAZN. Darts, just two letters off there. It's not that difficult to change it. No, but for me, that's the number nine of our stories in 2019, because to this day, I still get asked on social media and other platforms and my family, friends, and people in my surrounding, in my environment. Oh, yeah, I'm going to watch this game. Oh, yeah, you're the soccer guy. You love soccer. I want to watch soccer. Oh, it's not on TV. And that, oh, yeah, I'm excited. I heard about the Derby this weekend. What channel is it on? Yeah, it's on none. Okay. There's still that. And for me, it's maybe I'm in the bubble, obviously. I'm like mayor of that bubble. So it's hard to see the forest through the trees. But if my father cannot watch a game that he wants to watch in a one, I call it the one button mode, right? You just need to take your remote and click, or you take your phone and you do one thing. You have to do like 10 steps to be able to get, people won't. Like, it's too much. Like a podcast, it's already like limiting technology for people that are not aware. It's like, no, podcast now. Like, at least I don't get asked every day what's a podcast anymore. Like, we've gone through another level and people know how to get a podcast. I guess it'll be the same for DAZN eventually. But it's still, maybe it's just me through that bubble and I keep bringing it up. But in 2019, it was a subject that we talked about a lot and is worthy of our number nine spot in our top 10.
Yeah, no, for sure. Last thought, we've talked a lot about these things a lot. That's why they're in their top 10. I have noticed, I was concerned about this, and we talked about it a lot of the time, so I think it's worth mentioning now, that when I was out on Boxing Day, I went out Boxing Day shopping and wasn't glued in front of my TV to watch the Boxing Day games like I have been in the past. I sort of was following on my phone, which was nice to have that portability. And then when 3 o'clock rolled around, I wanted to obviously watch Leicester play Liverpool. I mean, as someone who observes this and talks about it and just likes it, I would clearly want to watch that game. And I actually found several places like Queen Street West that do have DAZN now, and that surprised me that they had gotten that much exposure, that much, like they're out in as many bars now as they are. And that's a good thing. And that's probably just a Toronto thing, I suspect.
No, it's the same here too. There's a lot more bars, and I think it goes to the bar, what works in a public setting in bars? Like hockey, yes and no, but there's so many games that it's not like an event, right? So it doesn't draw as many people to go out and spend money on a one-time basis. Boxing Day does for the Premier League. What also does it's Friday, Saturday night, combat sports, boxing, mixed martial arts. Bars love to play boxing late at night. It draws a certain crowd. It sells a lot of alcohol, and you can charge a cover charge and stuff like that. Same for Premier League. And so DAZN is really good for that. It does cater to the bar crowd, the pub crowd on a late Saturday, late Friday night, or early Saturday, Sunday morning for Premier League, and it's the same platform. So I've seen multiple places in Montreal, multiple places in Toronto, same for Vancouver, but outside of big
that's big market, what I meant. Yeah. Big cities is what I meant. I said Toronto, but I meant big cities.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like I don't think if you go to North Bay or to Timmins or to Amos that you'll find DAZN at your local watering hole.
And there's no Val d'Or viewing parties at 9 a.m. you don't think?
Sure, if they want Val d'Or, sure, but they're busy watching the Fagar. You know, at least they have a hockey team.
There you go. No, yeah, that is the key. It makes sense for bars when you think about it. Like, it's a whole other market you're opening up. Like, especially now in Ontario,
the don't get cable. It's like, sorry, don't interrupt, but it's like, it makes sense. Just drop the cable altogether. You always find something to put on the zone on your TV. No one is actually really watching, and then you have your Premier League or your combat sports when you need it.
Yeah, well, I think in Canada you always need your hockey package, so you subscribe to Sportsnet as well, maybe. But Yeah, and it's like you can go, if you're a sports bar, and now in Ontario you can serve alcohol at 9 a.m., so hell, you could go all day, and that's, you know, I think the Bob, Alper Bob's where I go, that's a big part of their business model, is that they are full all day long, because they have crowds that come at 9, and they have crowds that come at 9 p.m., and crowds that come at midnight, so anyway,
and that's a different topic. Famous for their curry fries, Alper Bob's in Toronto, number 8 of our top 10, Dwayne, what is your number 8?
We're an MLS show, of course. We are an MLS show that is half based in Toronto. So you cannot ignore the greatest story in MLS this year. Maybe not the greatest story. That might be LAFC's great season. But certainly the way it ended, you know, as the joke goes, to paraphrase a very old joke, MLS is a league in which 22, or well, how many teams it is this today, chase a ball around 26. For 8 months. Yeah. And then at the end,
Seattle, Toronto. And at the end, there's a German in there. There's a German joke in there somewhere. No, yeah, Toronto, Seattle, for the third time, part Seattle. Three. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I said part three, yeah.
That's part three. This time it's personal.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that there's a greater extension to this if you wish to not be focused on TFC or Seattle, if you're sick of them. And if you're outside those markets, I can understand how you probably would be. But what the greater message here is that there is an increasing move away from the concept that MLS was created with, and that is that there is parity across the board and that any team can win any year, and they still give credence to that. They still have rules in place, much to our frustration, some of us, that helped create that. But these teams, because of the DP rules, because of the fact there's no cap on spending outside of the players, like you can spend millions on a coach if you want. You can spend millions on a training facility if you want. So there are ways that the bigger clubs can distinguish themselves, and they are. And that's what I think Toronto v. Seattle Part 3 really speaks to, is this continuing move away from parity in Major League Soccer to a class divide. There are Colorados and Columbuses in this league now that have to scrape and pull and hope for a season in a bottle, you know, catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And they will, because the rules do allow that to happen occasionally. So it's not completely moved away. But I don't think I will make, I don't even think this is a bold prediction. If we go over the next 10 years, if we jump ahead 10 years now, I'm guessing that you are going to look at teams like TFC, teams like Seattle, teams like LAFC, teams like Atlanta, maybe the Galaxy, if they can figure themselves back out. Miami, if they, you know, have the money we think they are, hey, those are going to the teams.
They have a coach. It's already like upwards and onwards. They have a manager now.
Exactly. If they can get that stuff going on, then I think that those are the teams you're going to have. Maybe that's not 3 and 4 years again, but you're going to have those teams more than the rest are going to be in that. MLS tweeted out a graphic that said, retweet if your team won MLS Cup this year, and there were seven, or this decade, and there were seven teams in there, which over a 10-year period is a pretty good parity break. I'm guessing there's only going to be about four.
Yeah, I was going to say four, too. I agree. Yeah. And there's going to be a clear divide, like you mentioned. Let's quickly say New York, LA's. So New York with an S, LA's with an S, because it's big markets and always going to be potential. And then you have like Toronto, Seattle, and maybe like another club here and there that will be part of that rotation. Then you'll have the have-nots, the Columbus, the Colorados, the small markets, the Cincinnati's, who knows, and stuff like that. And then you'll have like middling teams like Montreal and others that some years will challenge for and some years will make the playoffs. But yeah, that is obviously where it is going to go. But Dwayne's number 8 is Seattle Toronto Part 3, the trilogy that finished with, I should say, depending on your perspective, this trilogy probably finished better than the Star Wars trilogies.
Depends on your perspective, yeah.
Exactly.
Strange. We could talk about this one all day, yeah. The three games were all unique little adventures onto their own, but maybe I'm seeing the nuance there that a non-Seattle, non-TSC fan might see. So yes,
yeah, it was just at that point, I thought that I've seen that movie before, and I've seen both endings, so what's the point? Anyways, I'm not here to talk about this. Congratulations to Seattle winning their second MLS Cup this decade. And number 8 in our top 10, my number 7, Dwayne, which is like my number 4, but it's 7 together, is the Whitecaps Anis Urbelis. And you're wondering, what am I saying? It's Latin for terrible year. Yes, the Whitecaps on the field, off the field, everything surrounding the Whitecaps, the fan support, the Kira McCormack, the 2008 allegations with Bob Berardo, and more behind the scenes, Bobby Larduzzi and his exit. There's a lot that happened in 2019 with the Whitecaps. And I guess for their entire year, they're getting number 7 in our top 10 stories of the year.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that our number one listened to show of the year was the Kira McCormack interview by quite a distance, actually. It was probably twice the amount of listens than any other show, and it was a significant amount of people, that number there. We're not going to release publicly our numbers, but that it was big. And that tells you how much crossover that section or that show, that issue had. And that was the overarching black cloud that was over the Whitecaps all year. And I think we should start with that when we're talking about how bad the Whitecaps year was, because that was the most serious thing that come out. And that was one that extended beyond the playing fields. And that, to me, is important to put out on top. But if you do then take it to the scoreboard, wasn't a good year in the scoreboard. If not for a terrible Cincinnati team, this is your wooden spoon winning team.
Yeah, because even San Jose did better. Like, even Minnesota did better. Candidates for the wooden spoon before the beginning of the season. You're absolutely right. And for their entirety of their contribution to Major League Soccer on and off the field in 2019, the Whitecaps have a bad year. And a number 7 in our top 10 moments of the year, stories of the year.
Yeah, and look, the Whitecaps, we didn't talk about their on-field stuff much last year because, bluntly, there wasn't much to talk about. You know, and I covered really bad years. I was the beat reporter for MLSsoccer.com during TFC's worst season. I know what it's like to feel that. It is so mind-numbing, like when you're just loss after loss, and how do you spin this, and how do you talk about this in a different way? And it became very difficult to find ways to bring the Whitecaps in that wasn't seeming mean after a while.
Yeah, well, so, sorry, Dwayne, I was just going to say, an example of how bad things are going with the Whitecaps, you know, shows like us exist for the Whitecaps, right? There's a few that we had on the show multiple times, people that we'd even consider friends doing these shows. And it was going so bad that people in Vancouver stopped doing shows about the Whitecaps because they didn't like. And there's multiple examples of this. It's just an example to tell you that things got so, I would say, mind-numbing to a point, like you mentioned, and so negative and pressured and the heavy weight on people's shoulders that they just stopped caring, stopped covering the team, writers stopped writing, podcasters stopped podcasting, and sports reporters stopped sports reporting on the Whitecaps because it was that type of year. And that's going to take a long time to recover from the Anis Urbelis of 2019.
Yeah, the only year that I have not podcasted this past decade was 2013. That was the hiatus year between when we started and when Ben and I ended. Thank God, because that was the second of the terrible years of TFC. And I don't know whether I'd still be podcasting if I had to talk about that all through that year. So, yeah, it's hard. And so my hat goes off to anyone who stuck with it through there. Could not have been easy, especially with the distraction of a new league, you know, Pacific, if you were a Pacific fan out there, and a lot of them probably were, to take your mind off of what was, you know, the shit caps, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Dwayne, you're number 6 in our top 10. It's your turn.
It's a beautiful night down by the lake when we got to scratch a nearly 40-year-old itch. Canada 2, USA 0. Look,
you remember? 2-0 instead of the French, right? 2-0, 2-0, 2-0.
Yeah, exactly. And look, the next month did not go as well. And I had deep fears about that heading into that. That was such a weird week. MLS Cup and then that. Oh, my God. Anyway, Look, beating the U.S., I think, mattered on a very emotional level for the Voyageurs that have been around for a long time. There were people that were, like, shaking with joy in, around me in the section because it was frustrating to constantly lose those. And particularly if you're a Voyageur of a certain age. And, you know, I say that with all due respect because I am pretty much a Voyageur of a certain age at this point.
I was going to say because you're the literal example of the Voyageurs of a certain age. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, or even guys older than me. Like, I'm thinking Dave Bailey and folks like that.
Yeah.
That were around. Like, I don't really remember the time when we were – I do, but I don't remember it as a Voyageur when we were – well, the Voyageurs didn't exist back then either, so neither do they. But as a true, like, watching out live at the games fan when we were better than the U.S. But they do. And it, I do remember a time of period when I first started being very active in the early 90s. Early to mid 90s, when it still was recent enough that it seemed like it's only a matter of time till we catch up, because MLS had just started then. There was no reason that we were better or worse than them, because the U.S. was not a soccer culture. We were more of a soccer culture, always have been. I still believe are more of a soccer culture across the board in this country, because we have, you know, our contacts to the to Europe are a little closer, I think, in Canada, particularly in the English side of the equation, where, you know, there's still people that have the Queen in their kitchen, right? So there's that. But it would always seem so frustrating. And then you saw the U.S. pulling away. And that was just this hammer down the top of we were even then. You know, we were better than we were even then. And now they are miles ahead. And there's no doubt that they are. Every bit of their infrastructure is more developed than ours. We, for God's sakes, did not start a professional league until 2019. So that is, you know, a problem. But
it's going to be in the top 10. That's how recent it is. It's going to be a topic later today.
Yes, exactly. So it was just a nice symbolic moment for Voyageurs and for the program to get that monkey off the back. No one has to talk about it anymore. It also, on a greater level, there was movement. There was improvement on the Canadian men's national team side this year. They were in the conversation to get to the hex for a while. They needed to be nearly perfect, and they almost were. That is worth celebrating. It's also worth reminding ourselves that they aren't perfect yet, and they are hex capable. I think they deserve to be in the hex. I think Canada is amongst the six best teams in CONCACAF right now. And that if it was a true, real qualifying format, that they would make the hex. I think it's unfortunate that they likely won't. But nonetheless, I don't want that to be the narrative. I want the improvement to be the narrative. And then we just get down to business of getting through the next year. They should get to the semifinals or the final, I would think, of that repechage. If they don't, that's an absolute failure. I'll say that right now. If they are not at least in the final of the repechage, it has been a failure. I will give them some permission to slip up at the final level or at the certainly at the hex level when they get in there and for the playoff, or then if they get to the next one, you know, that would be devastating if they slip up at that point, but you can understand it, right? But anything below that is terrible. However, we have seen progress, and I have reason. I don't know whether I would have said that. I don't know whether I would have said I expect them to make the final of the repechage a year ago from now, a year ago to now. I do now expect them to make the final.
Well, without Jonathan David and Alfonso Davies and their performance this year, we would probably not have the expectations, or at least the... Yeah, expectations is the right word, or the pressure and the expectations of results on this team. But you're right, and it is a story that is going to be continuing in 2020 for sure. Let's continue, Dwayne, and let's go to our number five. Oh, number five, yes, and that's my turn. Rémi Garde to Wilmer Cabrera to Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry becoming a coach in Montreal in Major League Soccer. This news made its way around the world, and it's our number five. The carousel of the managers of the Montreal Impact in 2019 that finishes with one of the biggest names to ever come to Major League Soccer.
Yeah, and look, these bigger names coming, you know, you could also extend that to David Beckham's involvement back in the league again as an owner. This is all part of the league getting more attention. As we talked about off air to a rumor that we're not going to talk about in this show, that attention has not extended necessarily to the media of the rest of the world or to the fans over there necessarily. But I think the people that matter are paying more attention to Major League Soccer. And that's really all we should care about. Like, who cares if, you know, TalkSport dismisses them and makes fun of them and still thinks that they have penalty shootouts that start about a 35-yard run in. Like, who cares what some dingbat in England thinks that has never watched a game in his life, right? We give too much thought to that. But what we should care about is what agents think, what athletes think. And there is growing evidence that they are willing to consider Major League Soccer as something more than just a place to have a nice little vacation in the Hollywood Hills with. This is also a place that you can go to at 29 rather than 33 and have a couple of good years at the end. I mean, no one's dreaming of playing their whole career anymore. I mean, they're sure there's 16, 18-year-old kids that are dreaming of playing in Major League Soccer because they grew up watching it. But they're not dreaming of ending their career there, right? No. The league's still not there and may never be there.
And in soccer, I don't think it's a thing anymore. Like, I don't think any players views themselves as a one-team player, right? A one-club player. Like, it's people's dream now to be, like, a record transfer. Like, to be, like, Eden Hazard and be transferred to a bigger club. Yeah, see what happens then. But, yeah, might be careful what you wish for. But that's a thing, right? Mbappe won, like, he's not going to be a PSG player forever. He's going to go play for Madrid. Because his hero did when he was a kid. That's the thing. It's not a prerequisite now that players, the loyalty of one club player. No, it doesn't even exist anymore. It's like people's dream to actually have a transfer and be like in the news.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, Michael Bradley was quoted when he re-signed as saying that kind of implied exactly what you're saying, that no one grows up dreaming of being a single, like he grew up idolizing single club players. But he then said he realizes that particularly for North American players, that's not a realistic goal anymore. But what you want to do is find some place to get comfortable. And that's what he said. And that's what he's found here. That's, I think, what people want now. And I think that MLS plays a part of that, that there are players out there that are good enough to play elsewhere that choose to come back here and play here earlier because they will be comfortable here and they can develop something. Bradley might be an example of that, might be the first example of that. But there's no doubt Michael Bradley nowadays is MLS level. There's no doubt he's good MLS level, but he's not, you know, he's nowhere in Rome. Is
I was going to say, he's not Rome or Michael Bradley playing with Totti, you know, in El Sharawi. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not. But he is a guy that when he came back could have found another Serie A club, chose instead to come someplace where he could establish himself. MLS is at the point where that's no longer weird. It was weird then. Like, go back to big soccer. I think it still exists anyway. And go through the archives and find the U.S. Abroads page when Michael Bradley came back to Toronto. It's real balanced, I'll tell you that. Like, they all need psychological help, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, don't call that.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. It is a place now that is getting more and more respect. And the fact that these big names are coming back. Is an indication of that, and you know, the fact that the BBC is putting articles out that Thierry Henry is going to leave Montreal before he starts, ignore those because they're just people clickbaiting.
Yeah, and guess what? It works. But that's our number five, the carousel of manager in Montreal, finishing with Henry as the new manager for the Montreal Impact. Number four, Dwayne, your floor.
Number four, I'm going to go with what I think has been a Premier League title race for the ages, not this year's, obviously, but last year's.
What race? Exactly. Well,
yeah, last year you had Liverpool playing the way that they're still playing and Manchester City playing just a little bit better. And that was an incredible title race that went down to the very last day. And you had a team that, you know, won a treble, an historic domestic treble in England. And the team that they edged out for the title for the league won the Champions League. Two giants battling it out against each other was an absolute for neutral. And, you know, I mean, you might not, unless you're a United fan, that was probably not very pleasant for a United fan to watch City and Liverpool battle it out. But for most neutrals that could take a step back and just enjoy the football, it was an incredible level of high skill. You know, you could extend that to say that this was the year of the Premier League. You had that battle at the top. You had all four of your European finalists, Europa League and Champions League, all from the Premier League.
Oh, that, yeah. Chelsea Arsenal in the Europa League, and you had Liverpool Tottenham in the Champions League.
Exactly. And, you know, and like I said, and then you have a treble winning team also to talk about there. It was a great year to follow the Premier League as a neutral. This year has not been as good, clearly, in terms of the title race, although I think that if you just enjoy who's going to finish in the European spots and who's going to get relegated and all those sort of other battles, then there's a lot to like about this Premier League title. It is even tighter for the middle than it usually is. You know, part of that is I think that the, you know, some of your traditional powers are slipping back, and a team like City has undoubtedly had, you know, has hit a slump. Let's just call it a slump. I think they're going to turn that around, but that's just the talent's too hard. But nonetheless, all that has contributed to what we see. It was a great year for that, and I think that you should celebrate that. It's hard to remember it, right? Like the Premier League, because it goes over 2 years, we're used to soccer leagues, you know, in this part of the world being a single calendar year thing. The Premier League, of course, is like a typical North American sport that it spans like 2 years. Hockey, so it's go ahead.
I was going to say just like hockey.
It spans the 2 years. So it's hard for us to sort of separate, you know, what's happening now versus what happened then. But I don't think we should forget what happened till May, because it was remarkable and we were all privileged to see it.
Yes, we did. And Manchester City won that Premier League and are still to this day defending champions of the Premier League. Number three of our top 10 moments of the last year in 2019. For me, it's the U.S. women's national team repeating as World Cup champion, this time in France, and the whole momentum that women's soccer gained during these games, and it's continuing, and we're seeing some progress in how the NWSL is structured and the salaries and how Sky Blue now will be respected and play at Rebel Arena. Like, there's a lot of positive coming out of the World Cup, won once again by the U.S. Women's National Team.
Yeah, in our, if you haven't listened to our Christmas Day episode, which is the top 10 moments of the decade in world football, the USA women versus everybody was one of our topics that we touched on. I think it was number 7. And I think that this speaks to that, and this sort of is the crowning sort of example of the USA versus everyone. Obviously, the U.S. women have become something more than just a soccer team. They are a movement. They are activists. They are symbolic of a certain attitude that young women...
They're a talisman to what a certain generation can view as just not like activism is a good way to put it, but it's not that. It's people that have a platform and use it for the right reasons and for use it to talk about issues that does concern them, and using sports as one of these platforms and not sticking to sports when it's not about sticking to sport, but it's also performing at the same time. It's the entirety of that message. The medium and the message itself, both together, are a powerful message in this case.
No, exactly. And look, whether you're right, left, center, purple, whatever, it doesn't really matter. I think you should celebrate the fact that these are young women that are willing to speak up for what they believe in. And I know that that's a very difficult thing for people to accept today. Like, you either have to, you're in camps. And if you're on the other camp, then you're wrong and you're bad and you're hurtful. That's bullshit, right? And it's problematic across many platforms. I don't agree with everything that women's... I agree with basically their philosophy in the world, like in terms of equality and things like that, but I don't agree with how they go about themselves all the time, right? And I don't think it's healthy to believe with every single thing they do. I don't think it's healthy to, like, just accept the fact that they celebrated the way they did in front of the Thai women just because you like them as people, as athletes. I think it's problematic. It's obviously problematic on the right, and everyone understands that. When the president is trying to attack Rapinoe, I we get that that's wrong. I think it's also wrong to just blindly go, no, but they should do anything they want because they are beautiful, right? Like, no.
Yes, exactly. You can like someone and not like what they do all the time, which is normal. Like, if you're married, you're going to love your wife but don't like what she does all the time. And it's the same for your husband. And it's the same for your father, your mother, your kids. You love your kids, but you don't love everything they do. Sometimes they show you a drawing and you think it's really nice, but, you know, it's not Van Gogh. It's like closer to Dali, maybe. But it is still, yes, I agree. You can respect and love a person or an athlete. You can be a fan of an athlete without having to, I would say, condone or approve everything they do.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? You can we can agree to disagree too. That's okay. In 2019, it's okay to agree to disagree on certain takes. So you may think that the way they celebrated in that game was perfectly acceptable. I think that it was crass and unnecessary, but that's my opinion, and I'm entitled to it just as you are, and we don't have to fight over it. But at any rate, this is kind of speaking to the point that these people create so much attention around them and give so much attention back to the game. And beyond that, and bottom line, and most importantly, they are brilliant athletes. They like to wear the black hat against the rest of the world, and they are the ultimate white hat, black hat team. They are massive heroes for many. They are massive villains to many, and they love it, and they add something to the game by doing that. And they have put so much attention on the women's game, as we called them in the year-end show. They are inarguably the most popular, most famous women's sports team in history. And you have to talk about them in a year that they won the World Cup, for sure.
Absolutely. There was our number three top 10 soccer stories in 2019. Number two, Dwayne, what is your number two soccer stories in the world in 2019?
Which is my number one. We didn't
Yes,
combine.
Exactly. Well, here, how about I go with my number two? And we go number one after, because it's worth it. We're in this country, and it's really important for us what happened last year. I go number two, which is very important as well. Number two, Alphonso Davies' breakthrough year at Bayern Munich, got transferred and signed in 2018, November, of course. But in January, February, March, April, May, and then in this fall, the breakthrough of Davies from the starting 11 to playing in the Champions League, playing in the Bundesliga, and being arguably the best left back in the world right now. Alphonso Davies, his rise to not just the best soccer player Canada has produced, but to being the best left back in the world. That happened in 2019.
Yeah, statistically speaking, he is the highest ranked left back in the Bundesliga by who scored. There is a statement we can say that no one can argue with. And that onto it, so it's just not everyone is getting that. Whether you believe in the who scored data in its entirety or not, you can agree that you have to be pretty good to top its ranking, regardless of whether you think its ranking is perfect or not. So that's incredible. And look, it was an amazing year for Alphonso Davies. And you know, it started slow. If we go back to this time last year, we were all concerned about what kind of playing time he would be getting. He did not get a lot of playing time last year. He trained mostly. He had a few spot. He came in a few times, not a lot. And I think going into this season, there were a lot of people that still were very concerned about him and wanted him to go on loan. And I always fought back against that. I wasn't alone, but I certainly did feel that I felt he was better off at Bayern, learning in that environment, because I believed that his talent would shine through and he would get his chance. And he did. I mean, you know, it took a few months, even at the start of the season. Obviously, he had that little mistake he made when he decided to jump on a plane thinking he could visit Jordan Heidemann in PSG in Paris for the night and then get back in time for training. Learned his lesson there, I suspect. Got a very significant fine for
Jesus. For $30,000. Can you imagine? That's a costly trip to Paris.
I hope he enjoyed his weekend with his girlfriend.
I hope it was fun. Yeah.
The
pastries were good and the coffee was good, because that's $30,000 worth of coffee and pastries.
Could you imagine being a teenager and just being able to, your girlfriend lives in Paris and you live in Munich, and you just jump on a plane and go visit each other?
I'll be there in 2 hours. Just pick me up at the airport, baby.
Perfectly normal teenage stuff, just like my teenage years. Exactly.
Yeah, scraping the bottom drawers to go buy some candies. Yeah, that's my childhood. It's just nothing. It's not the same.
Exactly. Anyway, but you know, he had that little blip, but then he also had that great goal he scored in the preseason against Spurs that everyone saw around the world and saw his talent there. And then obviously that plus that run, the assist to her around the world. The assist heard around Canada anyway last week.
Is acceleration on that move? You think it's almost like a video game. Like, wow, he's just leaving defenders. Like, leaving midfielders in his trail. in his wake. It's crazy the amount of speed he got and that finish, that great pass. But yeah, Alfonso Davies, his rise to not just like Canadian sports fan, but to international sports stardom. It is there.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say that. Yeah, I think that it's important. He's also broken through to the Canadian mainstream sports fandom. There was a photograph of him taken in with Connor McDavid last week.
Yes,
and it was put out in the hockey media trivia. And it wasn't like, you know, hockey legends spends time with soccer guy. It was like, look at these two great superstars that are both Canadian standing together. And it was accepted that way. And it wasn't that long ago that hockey fans in general would have like looked down their nose at Connor McDavid standing with a hockey player, but it's not anymore. That it's just another indication that he has helped the sport break through to the mainstream even more in this country.
And here's a statement for you, Dwayne. Alfonso Davies is more famous worldwide than Connor McDavid. I don't care. At me if you want, but it is the case.
I don't think there's even a question of that. He's a starter for Bayern Munich. It's not even close. I would guess right now, he would probably be the second or third most famous Canadian athlete currently playing.
I was going to say just famous Canadian behind Drake and Celine Dion, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say that she's, because tennis is massive. So I would think that she might be the most well-known Canadian athlete right now. Maybe Brooke Henderson would be in there as well because of the popularity of golf and women's golf in Asia and a lot of people in Asia. But yeah, he's right up there. So, and right. He's definitely more, you know, Sidney Crosby versus him.
Not even close. Go to Bavaria. And it's going to be easy. People will be like, oh, yeah, I know. I don't know who the heck Sidney Crosby is. But if you go anywhere in France, like, yeah, they'll hear Alfonso Davies. Sidney Crosby, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it would be in 6 countries in the world. And there'd be pockets around the world where there are hockey fans for sure. I mean, you can find them. But it's I think, top 5 for sure. And the other would be the tennis players. Maybe Brooke Henderson, as I said, because of golf's popularity and the basketball players, and it wouldn't even be close beyond that.
No, beyond that, it's not even close. Which leads us to our number one story in soccer in 2019 from our perspective. Dwayne, I give you the honors.
In 2019, Canada became the last industrialized nation in the world to create a Division 1 professional soccer league of its own. They had one previously in the 90s, which I do remember, but I didn't ever go to a game in the Canadian Soccer League days. I couldn't. I was in high school still and didn't live in Toronto. So there you go. But yeah, finally we got it back. And you know what? It wasn't perfect. I don't think anyone should have expected it to be perfect. There are still a lot of bumps along the way, but I think by and large, I think most people were pleasantly surprised by the level, in particularly in the beginning of the year. A lot of factors played into particularly the last half of the year being kind of dull. You know, they weren't playing for much because we knew who the teams in the finals were going to be. These are a lot of athletes that were playing their first fully professional season, and it was a lot of travel, and it really did affect the league at the end, but the quality was there. And heading into a second season, I mean, the next step I'd like to see with this league is to truly see a player sold out of it. I think we all kind of hope we might get one this year, but maybe that was a wish too far. I suspect your first moves will be to Major League Soccer. We might see a little bit of that even still yet. You never know. Obviously,
we're referring to Tristan Borges, who's the
Golden
Boot. But there's other like Marco Carducci, of course, goalkeeper of Cavalry, has opened some eyes. And there's other like
Dominic Zatora, I think, could play probably as a defensive depth player if he wanted to. Yeah,
and even a Nathan Ingham could probably find a backup place somewhere. He has a lot of potential. Of course, as a goalkeeper, his height will always be something that he'll need to like, it will be a preconceived notion they'll have to fight about, just like Evan Bush, another not as tall goalkeeper. But I think you're right that the Canadian Premier League is a top story for us in soccer, because when Can you say that you saw a league launch in just any sports? It's not something that is common. And to be able to talk about it for years before, talk about it now, looking at it, and to year two is coming, and also all the things and people involved, and there's going to be ebb and flows. People working in the year one, they're not going to be there in year two. People that thought they had a direction, people think that, oh yeah, that was the best idea, but then you reassess, you look at year one, like, oh yeah, actually we're going to move the direction over here because we, with experience now, with 1 year, we believe this direction is the best. So you'll have some readjustment on different levels for the Canadian Premier League. And I do believe 2020 will be better than 2019 for the Canadian Premier League.
More interesting to me. I mean, as a complete and utter unapologetic Canadian soccer geek, I did find the roster builds interesting last year, but then I actually knew who some of those players were, unlike 99.9% of the country. And even I didn't know who all of them were. So I think this year is a much more interesting offseason to watch and to follow, because you know these people, that you understand that there were players that, you know, I said this last year when we were talking about the league launch, that, you know, as much as we want to love these all and give them all hugs and have a group love in, there are some of them that aren't going to do well, and they're going to be cut. And you know, that
there was a lot of them. If you're a Niall Fax fan, 16 of them are cut. And there's between 5 to 10. If you're not Calgary or Forge, there's going to be a big roster transition and overhaul going into 2020.
And we're seeing significant movement in the league starting to happen, with players that, for whatever reason, fit, or probably fit on both sides, have decided to move other ways. Like Valor, I'm a little worried for Valor right now.
Yeah, because now their best players are all leaving. Louis Bélanger-Goyette going to Halifax. Where is Petrasso going? Petrasso going to Forge, right?
York 9.
Michael Petrasso's going to York. Michael Petrasso, have to say, one of my favorite player all time. Why? Because he got slapped in the back of the head by Zlatan, and he wasn't even mad about it. Like, how zen do you have to be? Michael Petrasso should be a yoga teacher after his soccer career. But yeah, no, I agree. Valor is, there's an exodus there somewhere. It's not easy.
Well, and not to be too ring, or not to be too solitudes of ours here, two rings. What kind of show is that? Combination of our shows. It's that two rings is our specialty Olympic show on
soccer,
Olympic qualifying.
A Canadian soccer Olympic show.
Yes, exactly. The two rings soccer podcast. We'd heard rumblings that they're all was not well in Winnipeg last year, and certainly the off season has laid credence to that being true. So we'll see what happens in the off season. Still a few months, unfortunately, still a couple months before we're really gearing up. But the Canadian Premier League launching was absolutely the number. It wasn't even close in my mind. Is the biggest story of 2019 in soccer, for our soccer, the world that we live in. That is the number one story. And we have a lot of American listeners, and we appreciate that. But we can't ignore our roots, and we are a Canadian show. And for a Canadian show to ignore the Canadian Premier League launching as its number one story would be just disingenuous. So that is my number one Canadian soccer story of the year. And, you know, it might be in the decade list too. We'll find out tomorrow.
Yep. There's also another moment that has to be in the Canadian soccer moments of the decade. But that will be for tomorrow on New Year's Day. We hope you enjoyed our New Year's Eve special. A little longer show than usually, but our top 10 moments of soccer in 2019. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Lerme. We'll be back tomorrow with a podcast-only show. We'll be online at 11 a.m. You can look at your podcatchers at around 11 a.m. Show will be published. Dwayne and I will talk about our top 10 moments of soccer in Canada in the 2010s, in the decade, and that will be for tomorrow. But as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We wish you a great day, a safe, happy new year, and a great 2020. It'll be a good one. It's a busy one. Olympics, Euro Championship, Tour de France, amazing coverage, full-time sports coverage here at the Sports Podcasting Network. Many, many good things to come for all of us here, and especially for you in 2020. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.